Let's cultivate our motivation. We're often very aware of our own unhappiness, but the level of unhappiness that we're aware of is a level that's also common to animals and all other living beings. In Buddhist terms, it's called the dukkha, or unsatisfactoriness of pain. So when our body doesn't feel well or comfortable, when our mind is unhappy. So these kinds of levels of unsatisfactory conditions, everybody recognizes as undesirable. Having compassion includes wishing ourselves and others to be free of that dukkha or unsatisfactoriness of pain. But compassion includes a much deeper level of seeing the situation of living beings and our own situation. And seeing the dukkha that comes about because conditions change. Seeing the unsatisfactoriness of simply having a body and mind controlled by afflictions and karma. So to really have compassion for ourselves and others, we have to understand these latter two types of dukkha from our own experience and then see them in relationship to others. And then on that basis, really strong compassion arises. And that compassion sees our own and others' dukkha as unbearable. And seeing it as unbearable, we don't react by getting anxious or panicky or freaking out. But instead, seeing that there is something we can do about it. We can develop the wisdom that cuts the root of all of that misery. Then we generate the aspiration for full enlightenment, so that we'll have that complete wisdom, the full compassion, and also the skillful means and abilities from our own side to be able to help all living beings free themselves from cyclic existence and these three levels of unsatisfactoriness. So it's to do this, just that we're gathered here to hear the teachings, to generate that motivation. Okay, so this Pali and Sanskrit word dukkha, it's often translated as suffering, sometimes as misery, but neither one of those is a very good translation. It really has much more the connotation of unsatisfactoriness, but that's a big mouthful to always say, the unsatisfactoriness of unsatisfactoriness. You know, so sometimes it's easier just to say dukkha, but try to remember, you know, what it actually means. When I first encountered the Dharma, one of the things that I found was such a relief was that people were willing to talk about dukkha. They were willing to talk about unsatisfactoriness. Because in the community I grew up in, you know, pain and misery was something that happened to other people. And if you had them, there was something kind of wrong with you, maybe. So in one way, there was the message of, you know, we don't talk about it. But in actual fact, people talked about it a lot, and there was constant complaining. Yeah. So here are these two interesting extremes of a denial of the unsatisfactoriness of the situation. And then the other extreme of constant complaining about what was happening. Okay. And I think we can kind of see that in our society, can't we? You know? For example, regarding death, on one hand, there's a total denial of it. You know, Forest Lawn is now a museum and a park and an art gallery and where you can go on a Sunday afternoon for a picnic with your family. It's not just a cemetery. You know, we cover it up and we embalm people who are dead. We don't look at that. We put people in homes. Okay, so on one hand, there's this denial of misery. On the other hand, when you talk to people, what do people talk about all the time? Yeah? What do we talk about all the time? Our problems. Our problems, don't we? You know? I have a problem with this, I have a problem with that, and this is going wrong, that's going wrong, you know? So, yes, we have this really weird kind of view that isn't able to actually see the situation for what it is. And so we react by denial, and we also react by complaining, and we also react by getting anxious, you know? Kind of like, oh, something's wrong, you know? We're not quite sure what it is or what we can do about it. So that's why I say one of the things that I felt such a relief at when I met the Buddha's teachings was this willingness to talk about suffering in a really practical way, without denial, but without belly aching. Yeah. And so, yeah, it's strange that it's a relief, but I don't know. Maybe it will be for you too, I'm not sure. But, you know, I remember when my teacher started talking about the six types of dukkha for a cyclic existence. The first one is instability, you know, how unstable everything is in our life. And it's really true, isn't it? It's like we're always trying to make everything very stable, very secure, so we have it all planned out, so then we feel like we're in control and we know what's going on. But in actual fact, everything's so unstable. Yeah. The other day when we were talking in the garden, and we were talking about some of the young people, you know, who enlisted in the army, like, you know, in 2000, 2001, you know, before 9/11 happened, thinking that, oh, you know, you put out some fire, or, you know, it's a way to get your college education, or people who enrolled in the National Guard thinking, okay, you put out some fires in your community, or, you know, you help with a flood, something like that. Nobody anticipated being where we are right now. Now, but look how uncertain things are, how unstable they are, how things can happen just like that, and it's like the situation changes dramatically. Okay, so this lack of stability in our lives is a form of dukkha. Yeah? And that's why I don't like to use the word suffering or misery, because then we think, oh, misery, suffering, depression, you know, like that. But no, just to be able to look at it and say, yes, it exists, and it's an unsatisfactory condition, but it's the nature of cyclic existence, the nature of samsara, that this happens. Yeah. Ulrich and I we share a very good friend together, Alex Friesen, And I've known Alex for many years. And sometimes when I want a bellyache, then I call Alex up, because he and I bellyache to each other. And and I remember one time, you know, kind of Alex, you know, kind of spilling my problems out. And Alex is such a good Dharma friend. He's on the phone and he says, "This is samsara. What do you expect, children?" And he's absolutely right. It's like, what do I expect? You know? I expect everything to be certain and planned out and secure. Well, yeah, my deluded mind does expect that. That shows how little wisdom there is inside. Yeah? So I think that shows what a good Dharma friend he is. And, you know, instead of going, "Poor you," you know, he says, "Well, what do you expect?" And as soon as I thought about it, well, he's absolutely right. What do I expect? So let's drop the complaining, you know. This is the nature of cyclic existence. This is why we want to get out of it. Okay? So, you know, but just see how things are uncertain, you know. And that is the nature of being under the control of ignorance and karma. Yeah? Father, we don't have certainty. We don't have control. And we're running around our whole lives trying to make everything secure, aren't we? Now, people are trying to get their retirement funds all, you know, secured away. You're trying to decide, like, what relationship you're going to have. And, you know, then you have a formal relationship. Okay, I got that taken care of, you know. Then, you know, what your degree is going to be in, and, you know, after you change it 500 times, and, okay, well, I might as well graduate in this and get it over with, you know, kind of trying to stabilize something in this very unstable world. Okay, so this instability, constant change, uncertainty, yeah, instead of reacting to it with anxiety, to just see this is the nature of cyclic existence, and therefore we want to generate the mind that is determined to leave cyclic existence, the mind that wants to renounce that kind of dukkha. Okay? So instead of getting anxious or depressed, we see the same thing, but we react in a different way, and we use it to motivate our practice. You getting what I'm saying here? The second kind of dukkha is the dukkha of dissatisfaction. And I can't tell you what a relief it was for me to hear my teachers talk about the pervasive nature of dissatisfaction, because that had been my experience my whole life. You know, it wasn't just Mick Jagger, you know. He had it with, you know, "I can't get no satisfaction." But, you know, it was much more expansive than he was talking about. But it's that same thing, you know. It's like you go through your life and you try this and, you know, this is going to do it. And then you do it for a while and you're unhappy there and you want to do something else. So then you move and you go to this place and, you know, for sure it's going to be better here. And you do that. And then same kind, you know, unhappiness, it's not working there. So let's move and let's go to this place. And, you know, surely these people are going to be better and nicer, and the setup's going to be better and going to be happier there. And you move there and still, you know, it's like, oh, they looked really good and then they turned out to be awful. So let's go over here and try this, you know. And so what you see is, especially now that there's such wealth in our country and so many choices, this in tremendous confusion that people suffer from as they're impelled by their dissatisfaction to go here and go there and try this and try that to get some kind of pleasure. Yeah? And there's so many choices of what to do that people get confused. Yeah? And so we're running here, running there, trying this, trying that, and always winding up in the same old thing. Yeah? I mean, there's such an incredible divorce rate in this country. Because people have these illusions about, oh, marriage, this person's going to make me everlastingly happy. And that lasts for, I don't know, a year, 2 years, whatever. And then, nope, don't like this guy, Let's try another one. And, Elizabeth Taylor's had how many husbands? And some of these other movie stars, how many wives? And, so it's just this dissatisfactory mind that wants more, that wants better, that's always saying, something's wrong with this situation, let's go somewhere else. Okay? Do you know that mind? Do you suffer from that mind? let's try this, let's try that. Sometimes people even do it in the Dharma circles. Okay, I'm going to go to this Buddhist center. Oh, no, let's try this meditation. No, let's try that one over there. Oh, I'm sure this teacher over here is better. Let's go to that one. Oh, no, let's do this retreat. No, I don't like that one. Let's do that retreat. I'm trying all 32 flavors in the Buddhist consumer shop, thinking that the grass is greener on the other side of the meditation hall. Or as one of my friends says it, the people in the other temple have nicer chanting than we do. But always this mind is so dissatisfied. So instead of seeing that as a problem with the external situation, everybody's disappointing me and nothing works out. To say this is the nature of cyclic existence. As long as I am a cyclic existence, there's going to be this dissatisfaction. Therefore, if I really want to have some peace in my life, I have to get out of cyclic existence. Okay? So we're developing that strong determination to be free. That determination to be free, the Tibetan is ne jung. Ne is like definite and jung is to arise or to emerge. So like definitely emerging from what? From dukkha, coming out of dukkha. Sometimes the Tibetan term ne jung is translated as renunciation. People get freaked out by the word renunciation. I don't want to renounce. I want my chocolate and cheesecake. Don't talk to me about renunciation. Actually, they don't understand that what we're renouncing is dukkha. Okay? What we're renouncing is insecurity and unsatisfactoriness and being under the control of afflictions and karma. That's what we want to turn our back on. Okay? We're not renouncing happiness. We're going towards happiness. Okay, a third kind of dukkha that the Buddha talked about is the dukkha of getting born again and again. Yeah, and the fourth one is the dukkha of dying again and again. And those two go together, because as soon as we're born, then we're headed towards death. Now, that's the natural outcome of birth is death. We all, when somebody's born, we're all excited. Oh, this baby's born. Everybody celebrates, And when somebody dies, then we're all sad. But actually, those two things go hand in hand. You don't have birth without having death later on. So it's kind of strange that we celebrate birth, don't you think? If you think of the big picture of what cyclic existence is, then celebrating birth is like celebrating death, because they go together. Nobody lives forever. Nobody has so far. I don't know why it should start now. Even though science is trying to, alter that, they haven't succeeded. Okay, so giving up this cycle of birth and death. Now that's what we want to give up. That's what we want to renounce. The fifth kind of dukkha is the dukkha of going up and down. Yeah, we know this one. Up and down, up and down, up and down. And it's referring particularly to our status, okay? In the sense that we'll be in a good rebirth like now, and then through the force of negative karma, we'll be in a bad rebirth. And then we'll be in a good rebirth again, and then at a bad rebirth. You know, and up and down and up and down and up and down. So it's not like we have this precious human life and we're guaranteed to constantly go up, you know. But you can see by the kind of thoughts that go on in our mind and what we say and what we do, that we do create negative karma that will bring about lower rebirths. So, you know, it's the suffering of the change in status, okay, in our realms, or even within this life. You know, somebody who has been, you know, is very rich, then suddenly becomes really poor. Or somebody who's poor becomes rich. Now, I remember, I can't remember which year it was. Some years ago, remember the stock market went down, like, really suddenly? And then there was this whole rash of suicides. You know, all these people who had been rich and successful, you know, on one day, the stock market changes, and all of a sudden, you know, they don't have the wealth they had before, and they just despaired, and they felt, you know, without wealth, my life is worth nothing, I'm humiliated, and they killed themselves, which I think is a tremendous tragedy when people think like that. You know, but you can see, just, you know, in the level of wealth, it fluctuates like this. And then I read an article not long ago about, you know, people who win the lottery. Because, you know, very often it's people who don't have a lot of wealth who buy lottery tickets. And then they think, oh, okay, I'm going to win this money and then I'm going to be happy. And this article was incredible about, you know, these people have this wealth, but a lot of times there are other habits, you know, different personality habits that kept them in prison before. They're the same personality habits they have after they're wealthy, and they wind up being just as unhappy. Yeah? Or squandering the wealth or whatever. It was really quite a good article. I printed it out during retreat, remember? You know, for all the people who were having anxiety about not having money. It's like, well, you have it, and it doesn't really work out any better. So, yeah. But this instability, how we're going up and down all the time. Okay? So that's the fifth one. And then the sixth situation of samsara is that we experience all this dukkha alone. Yeah. And so we're born alone, aren't we? We go through the whole birth experience by ourselves. We die alone. Even there's a lot of people around us, we're the only one dying. Or even if we die in a car crash with somebody else, we're each having our own experience as we die. All throughout our life, we're just having our own experience. Nobody else can crawl inside of us and change it or take it away. And I know that was a real shocking one for me when I first heard it. Because I think, for so long I was always looking for somebody else who would really deeply understand me and always be there and take my suffering away. And, you know, I could never find that person. And so it was like, oh, well, no wonder I couldn't find them, because it doesn't exist. You know, because we all have our own experiences. We are all in our own samsara, our own cyclic existence. So, like I said, in one way, thinking about all of this was a tremendous sense of relief, because it was like bringing it all out in the open. In another sense, it was very shocking to me, because I really saw how deeply entrenched we are in cyclic existence. You know, what it really meant to be under the control of afflictions and karma. Now, it was much more horrific than I had thought.